FIS Insider, a premium edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Joining us on the show today is Gene Munster. He's the founder and managing partner at Loop, an investment firm located in Minneapolis. And Gene, I want to start off with what you had mentioned late last year. You were talking about investors, particularly in big tech, being cautious headed into 2022. And I know that you were saying that you were really looking at the first 3 months of this year being a time for a correction, primarily in big tech. Of course, we have seen that really. That was the peak for a lot of these FANG stocks. Given that we have seen quite a bit of a drawdown in alignment with what you said, what is your outlook currently on this space?
We're getting closer, and we think about finding the bottom still over the next couple months, in part because we're still waiting for clarity from the Fed, and the Fed's waiting for clarity from the economy, and the economy is waiting for clarity on everything from infrastructure-related supply-demand to geopolitical aspects. And so it is easy to villainize the Fed here. I think the reality is that they're still finding their way. And what the market really wants more than anything is just clarity. And we're not at a point of clarity. And so I think that there still is a downside risk here. And the way we're approaching our portfolio at Loop is we're cautiously adding to positions. We still have the luxury of being a large percentage of the fund is in cash. And so we're continuing to slowly deploy here what we see as a bottom forming over the next couple months. And if you're going to ask me that, you know, recognizing that calling the bottom is difficult, where do we think that the bottom is? It's probably when the Fed actually starts raising rates, which if they end up doing that, it's probably going to be in March. So I think that that is going to be a relief for investors. Instead of anticipating rate hikes, we can say we started down that path, and I think that would relieve some investors.
So in this case, it sounds like you're going with a sell the rumor, buy the news on the Fed rate hike.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the divergences that we're seeing in the big tech names. You know, I think we have seen a big, big drawdown in some of the high growth tech, you know, I mean, 50 to 80% in some cases, as some of our guests have mentioned. You know, we are seeing some major divergences in the FANG stocks, right? So these are the darlings of the tech universe. Facebook, Meta is down pretty big. It's the largest one-day drop in value for any U.S.-listed company on record after their quarterly disappointment. Apple is holding up. Amazon is down. Netflix down big. Google down slightly from their highs. So let's talk a little bit about some of the divergences you see developing there.
The line is separating infrastructure versus attention companies. And the two attention companies, companies that fight for our attention, have been most negatively impacted, as you mentioned, which is Facebook and Netflix. And it is a reminder of how difficult the attention game is. I think that there is more to Facebook than just simply attention. Loop is an investor in Facebook. But I think that that's generally where the line has been drawn. And the question that we debate is not, you know, the line or what's on one side of the line or what's on the other side. It's what's priced into each of those. And I think when you kind of peel those back and look at some expectations relative to what the opportunity is and still think about FANG, I think that you still have Apple at the top. I think that despite the fact it has not had the same correction that other FANG have seen, it still sits high given the demand for its current products and also the opportunity for the company to expand in other markets. And then on the flip side, I think that there still is some value with what Facebook is doing with their network. But I went outside of your question. Your question was, what's the line? What's the differentiation between the haves and nots in FANG recently? And it's infrastructure versus attention.
Okay. Now, you said that you're selectively buying at this point. Are you concentrating in these FANG stocks, or are you looking elsewhere?
Well, we look for generational companies, transformative companies, and I can say it's across tech. And so there are some themes that we're investing. We can talk about current investments and, you know, probably best that we stay away from what we're actually, some of the specifics of what we're doing in the portfolio. But, you know, I can say that when we think about our portfolio, we're investors in Coinbase. That's a company that we believe is the bank of the metaverse. Whether the metaverse is going to happen, what form it actually takes is to be debated. Is there going to be commerce in the metaverse? I think that even though there's debate about what form it's going to take, I think that there's some consensus that there will be commerce on it. It could be gaming related. It could be even everyday work on it. And crypto is going to be the currency of the metaverse. And so that's where kind of Coinbase plays into that. And so it's beyond FANG. FANG's an important part of tech investing, but we try to look for those generational companies that the market doesn't appreciate as being generational yet. And we think Coinbase, despite all of its ups and downs, has an opportunity to really anchor what's going on in crypto as an exchange to bring finite money into the metaverse.
Some of the comments that our prior guests have made is that it's going to be hard for these FANG stocks to grow their multiples just as much as they have in years past. And now at this point, if you want to be investing for the FANG stocks of the future, let's say, you know, you want to be looking beyond the Facebooks, the Apples, the Amazons, the Googles, the Netflix. You want to be looking at the up-and-comers. And you're looking for generational opportunities. Coinbase is part of that, but you know, you're looking again outside of the FANG stocks.
We are, and that's I think where we've kind of spent most of our investing careers, to try to find companies before they've had this adoption into everyone's lives. And it starts with trying to figure out where our lives are going. But that's correct. We think that there is upside. We think there's measurable upside still. Within, as I mentioned, Apple is just on multiple levels, it makes sense. But by the numbers, it's pretty straightforward. Just by the numbers, it's hard to get a $350 billion company to grow at 30%. That's difficult to do. And so we just kind of look down to smaller companies. Now those have higher risk too, because some of these companies aren't making money, and market doesn't particularly like companies that aren't making money. And so there's that dynamic that we think a lot about as well.
Okay. Now you had mentioned the metaverse. How do you invest in the metaverse? Obviously Facebook is considered the go-to play, and they're really branding their whole company around the metaverse by renaming it to Meta. Obviously Facebook has seen again a major hit here at this point. Are there other companies that you're looking at that you think really do give investors an exposure to this area? And what are your thoughts on the metaverse more broadly in terms of how you see this expanding going forward?
Maybe just as like a definitional part, what is the metaverse? And as I mentioned, is that different people have different views of how this is going to play out. It's often referred to as Web 3.0. And our view is that the metaverse is just a new way that we're going to engage the internet. It is could be 2D, like existing monitors. It could be TV screens. It could be immersive. It could be some of the worlds that Mark Zuckerberg talks about, is these headsets that you put on and you feel a sense of presence. And whether it's immersive or 2D, it is going to be more time that we're going to spend. And the reason why we'll spend more time is that the types of things that we're going to do and the attraction to those things is going to increase. As gaming speeds improved, as the graphics on gaming improved, as the connection points to keep you engaged in gaming improved, you saw engagement increase. Just look at Roblox. It's remarkable the amount of engagement they have. Average teenager in the U.S. who plays it a couple hours a day. That number's been going up. And so maybe that's just a starting point. It's just more digital engagement. Maybe you could think of the metaverse in a very basic way as that. And then we, from an investment standpoint, we think about ways to participate in that. And we talked a little bit about Coinbase. Another holding of ours is Take-Two. And Take-Two is, obviously it's a gaming company. It's a 2D gaming company today. It's got a good business. Its products, specifically Grand Theft Auto, haven't been updated for a long time. The last major upgrade was 8 years ago, but it continues to sell. It's like number two or number three in terms of total units sold every quarter, despite being that old, which is kind of a sign that that's an opportunity to take that franchise and move it into the metaverse, update it. And that would be like an example You know, other areas, when we think about the metaverse more more broadly, companies that we're not invested into that often get, I mentioned we're investors in Facebook. So that, those would be kind of the three that I would look at, be Coinbase, Take-Two, and Facebook. Other investors talk a lot about like Unity, for example, as a brick, as a picks right. and axes for that.
Yeah, Unity Software, right? That's a pretty big name that's mentioned. But like you said, you know, Roblox is a pretty big gaming company, and lots of money being poured into there. That got whacked really hard, right? That's another one of those high growth tech names that are off strongly from their highs from last year. Maybe there's a little bit, a little more value at this point.
Yeah, more value than before. And we just, our perspective on down from the highs, it's something that we look at. We whenever we talk about it, of course, I'm sure you're on the same thinking as this, is that it's hard to justify things of value. You know, something could be inexpensive that's down 5% from its high. Something could be expensive if it's down 80% from its high. It just all depends on what the business is doing. And so we keep coming back to that. And I think that in the case, I haven't done as deep of work on Roblox from an investment standpoint. But I think if you just think about the growth rate versus what's implied in the stock, that's whether you can try to start to separate whether some of these, when they're down as much as they are, if they're actually a buy or not.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about Roblox, anecdotal story here, but my son started mentioning it. And so I paid a little bit of attention. This was, you know, probably last year, 2 years ago. And then another kid had mentioned it just randomly. And all of a sudden I was like, okay, something's happening here. More and more kids are talking about Roblox is the only thing that they use for gaming. So, and that was right just as you started to see, you know, the stock explode. Again, it's come down very big from its highs. Some of the other areas that I understand that you focus on, at least you have in the past, public comments, autonomous vehicles, brain tech, brain machine interfaces. You know, we talked about a little bit about metaverse or the AR, a mixed reality space, robotics even. Tell us a little bit about some of these long-term plays that you're looking at and, you know, what you're telling investors about how to invest in these areas.
When it comes to, you know, autonomy, it's largely around making a prediction about what's going to happen at Tesla. And so a lot of debate about that, whether it's priced in or not. I think that despite what is far from a perfect product with full self-driving, that there's room for them to make more progress than typical automakers, and they're going to be a success there. And then we kind of go, that's, I would say, in the regular department. And then when we start talking about brain tech, we get into the toy department. This is something that we've invested meaningfully in. And our fund is both public and private. It's a hybrid fund. And so on the public side, we have not made investments in brain tech. The private side, the biggest company out there is Neuralink. We're invested in kind of its number one competitor that most people don't know, which is Paradromics. And the basic idea is that we're trying to find ways to connect the brain to computers. And what that could help solve is everything from migraine headaches to blindness, deafness, paralysis. And so there's this massive opportunity around what's going to happen in brain tech that I think is not fully appreciated by the markets. And the reason why they're not in the public markets today is because they're still, you know, 10 years away from becoming real companies. Even Neuralink has so much to go. They've got deep pockets with their investors, but just a long way to go. But I kind of think of that as just a really juicy area of investment, still outside of mainstream. But if you're going to think about what areas could really kind of capture thematic investing, last year it was EVs. I think that brain tech, whether it's next year or the year after, 5 years from now, I think eventually it's going to have its day. It's going to come. And unfortunately, yeah, it's just really hard to invest in right now. Just to get back to your question, it's difficult to invest in today.
Right, right. Like you said, there's areas on the private side, but on the public side, I'm not aware of any ways to publicly.
No, you can't. No, it's difficult.
I mean, tough. Yeah, like Tesla is obviously with Elon Musk and his investments, but they're not getting any revenues from Neuralink, so.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's at this point. I do want to point out, though, that with brain interfaces, and let's talk about brain chips, right? So you can talk about invasive or non-invasive, right? So there's non-invasive devices that would be like headsets, which do interact with your brain. And then there's invasive, which would be like Neuralink, Elon Musk working on that, where you actually are wiring a chip into your brain. Those have been around for a long time. A lot of people don't even realize that, right? I mean, deep brain stimulators, for example, with Parkinson's, those have been in use for 10 years at least. I mean, maybe even longer than that. 20 years? It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. There is a... Just on that note, just to give you some context, about 7.5 billion people in the world, something like that. And then you have, the number of people on Facebook call it 3.5 billion a month. And you kind of keep, the funnel keeps getting smaller and smaller, 2.5 million Peloton users. And then you get to the number of people with brain implants. And some form of a brain implant globally right now, it's sub 50,000. Very rare. In part because risk reward just isn't there. You said it's been around for a long time, but it really hasn't hit a point where the risk reward is there. And this is kind of the something that comes mainstream with Neuralink today, is that they've talked about, they've had some success about doing some brain interfaces with pigs and some pretty impressive videos that they talked about more recently. To your point, they've been doing that for 20 years. You implant something, you can kind of change what a pig does. Going from an animal to a human is a step. It's a big step. It's a light year step. And the way it plays out is that you have to get more procedures done on humans. And the way that the, at least in the US and like Europe, the way that the medical industry looks at this is that it's largely too risky. So there is humanitarian opportunities for people to get some of these implants. And when Musk says we're going to have an implant in a human by the end of 2022, it's most likely going to come from these exceptions that they can get. So somebody is in a difficult place and they're willing to try something like this out, part for science, part for themselves. But the reason why that's an important distinction is that the number of actually people who will get the procedure is relatively small. And so you have a situation where, yes, you can get these implants, but there's not going to be enough clinical data around it to really get it to be mainstream. And so I think putting all of this together is that it's been around for a while, as you said. It's still small, the number of people who have it. And the accelerator point has a massive governor on it. And the governor is in keeping people safe and what the medical industry is doing around that. And it's just going to take years for more of these humanitarian cases to get in the wild and for us to get data to show that they actually are safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just looking up this. So it looks like deep brain stimulation, Parkinson's being really one of the first use cases, began its adoption. 2002 is when it really started. And so my mom is actually one of the people that have
amazing,
a deep brain stimulator for Parkinson's. And she had, you know, it was a pretty debilitating case of it. When she got it done, just on one hemisphere of her brain first, I don't want to say it reversed Parkinson's completely, but it significantly lowered the rate of tremor, the amount of medication that she had to use. And then she got the second hemisphere done afterwards, once it started to sort of taper off. And again, huge bump up. So it's amazing. You know, a lot of people don't realize just how, like you said, it is rare, but for Parkinson's patients and other movement disorders, dystonias, and things of that nature, it is becoming much more common, and it's been shown to be highly effective, as I've seen with my own mom. So I think, you know, the use case is there. It's growing even beyond Parkinson's and into the non-invasive space as well, where you don't even have to do surgical implants. We're seeing a lot of interesting innovations with headsets and things like that on stimulating parts of the brain. So it is a fascinating area, and it is an area that you're definitely invested in on the private side of things, it sounds like.
Yeah, and great to hear that story about your experience with it. And I think there's just an opportunity to help, I think, repair where the brain goes wrong. There's an ethical question, which is going to be on the scope around brain tech. And Elon Musk talks about this idea of, creating superhumans and the ability to, you know, imagine for someone who's perfectly healthy to insert a chip that allows them to, you know, speak every language in the world. All of a sudden, you've got some ethical problems around people with access to those kind of treatments. Those enhancements can become superhumans. And that's, to me, is a long way. It's just more like a science fiction conversation right now.
Well, the military is already planning for that. They're already preparing for that as a potential reality. We've spoken with guests who they provided research for the military on this, and I mean they're already laying out this as a very real potential outcome. I mean, they see the handwriting on the wall and they're already thinking, okay, how do we handle this in terms of, you know, our military people, our force coming in, if they do have brain implants, how do we end up making sure it's not hacked? And, you know, if there's an EMP device that goes off, does that, you know, I mean they're planning for all of this.
Intense.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Gene, to sum up some of what we discussed today, you don't think we're quite at the bottom yet here in terms of maybe the, you know, the major averages, particularly when we look at big tech. It might be that we'll see that finally happen once the Fed raises rates. Again, this would be sell the rumor, buy the news. But really, it's all the uncertainty and volatility leading up to the Fed's decision. Once the Fed finally makes it, hopefully that brings in a little bit more certainty to investors. Mm-hmm. That would be happening in March, as long as they don't do an inter-emergency meeting. Most people are thinking that's not going to happen. So it's widely expected that they will be raising rates in March. Could be 50 basis points. We'll have to see exactly how much. But that would be a good time to think about, you know, maybe we've seen the bottom materialize. And again, you're not really focused heavily on these big tech FANG names for long-term growth. You're looking more at the emerging high-tech space at this point. And you named some different opportunities and long-term themes that investors can look at. Would that about summarize what we discussed today?
It would. There's one, maybe a postscript to it, is something that's more near-term as just what's going on geopolitically. And I think that heavily influences our view about not being at a bottom. It's something that has been simmering over the past month. It's becoming more acute now. And I think that there's a risk that the markets get more nervous about how that plays out, not just if there's like military action, but even if there's change of government and what impact that has. And I would just say this, there's an old adage that Russia plus Ukraine is an empire and Russia minus Ukraine is a country. And, you know, that dynamic, I think, is going to weigh heavily into how this plays out. And I think can fracture some of the confidence in the market in the near term. I see this as acute downside that doesn't last that long. I think the market probably quickly kind of moves on from it. But, you know, over the next, it's not going to get resolved in the next day, that's for sure. Probably take a few months to get resolution on this, but that's something else that we didn't talk about that that we think is an important topic.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when you're thinking about how that impacts oil prices, where, you know, the further oil prices move up on any of that geopolitical uncertainty, the tougher that puts the Fed in a box and, you know, trying to thread the needle of raising rates to combat inflation, but also not add too much pressure on the markets mm-hmm. during a time where we already see consumer sentiment falling steeply and lots of the other things that people are looking at.
That geopolitical element, in my view, diminishes the likelihood that we have all these rate hikes that people talk about. And again, I think it's neither here nor there. I think what matters most is just for the Fed to get moving on something that investors can say, okay, old news, let's move on. Didn't mean to bury the lead there, but I'm glad we caught it.
All right. Well, Gene, as we close, would you mind telling our investors a little bit more about Loop? I really enjoy Loop TV, which you have on YouTube, where you talk about, you know, whether or not things that are happening in Apple, NFTs, a lot of the emerging tech space. You provide some great analysis with you and the rest of your team. So if you would mind, tell our investors how they can follow a little bit more of your work.
Yeah, check us out at Loop Funds. We've got a few financial products with an ETF, ticker LOUP. that invests in 30 transformative tech companies. And then we also have some LP-based products that do that public-private crossover. So enjoy very much giving the time to talk about A, B, and C topics with you. A lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. It was fun, and we definitely look forward to having you on again.
If you have any questions or feedback on what we discussed today, or if you'd like to get in touch with us about our asset management or financial planning services, you can do so by going to financialsense.com and clicking where it says Contact Us. As always, don't forget to spread the word about FS Insider with your friends and family and share our podcast on all of your social media channels. For FS Insider, I'm Chris Sheridan. Thanks for listening.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.